Hello and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast all about slow living in a fast-paced world, and I am delighted to have you, and I'm also Brooke McCallery.
Oh, I'm happy. Okay. And I'm also delighted to have you here. My name is not happy, of course. It's Ben McCallery. Welcome to episode 211. So 211 has you talking to the founder of Folk Rebellion.
It does, indeed.
That sounds very intriguing.
It is intriguing, and Jess is an intriguing person, actually.
Is she the chief rebel?
I believe she's the chief rebel. The rebel rouser?
Yeah.
Rebel rouser? She's the founder of Folk Rebellion, and I've been following Folk Rebellion for probably 2 years, just on Instagram. They're a really cool follow if you need these kind of short, sharp reminders in your day-to-day mindless scrolling to put your phone down, they will give them to you. Jess is an unapologetic advocate for getting the hell off our devices and getting into life.
Which is so weird for someone that, you know, spent her entire career creating digital
brands. She was a digital strategist. Yeah.
For like companies and people and everything else.
Which is actually an integral part of her story. And she talks about that at the beginning of our conversation about her insanely tech-dependent life and the impact that it had on her for many years. And I guess the moment that she realized the impact it was having and decided to do something about it. And it's just a cool story. But what I love about it is that she realized how phenomenally widespread this issue was and how many people were wandering around suffering the same kind of, you know, feelings as her, either just as severely or not even as severely, but, you know, she decided to do something about it. And it's a kind of a call to arms for people who want to get off their phones a little more and want to look people in the eye when they're having a conversation. And, you know, it's all about really living an analog life, which I love. It's not about simplicity necessarily. It's about doing stuff with your hands and listening to like a whole album on a record player and going hiking and like knitting
eating a whole wheel of cheese.
I'm not even mad. I'm impressed. It's about just doing things in a gutsy way, wholeheartedly. Mm. You know, and I think that the underlying message is that when we're distracted, which we all are, and this interview actually came at a really good time for us because the last month or so we've been speaking a lot about the fact that we are all distracted and we are all kind of pulled in three or four different directions at any given time because of our screens. But really, the underlying message of Folk Rebellion is when that's the case, we're half-assing everything, you know, and getting offline, taking a weekend, deleting the Instagram app, whatever it may take for you, is a surefire way to get present. And I love it. She's really unapologetic about it, and I think it's awesome.
That's awesome. You can find out all about Jess and her wonderful company over at folkrebellion.com. Mm.
One of the other good things, actually great things that Jess is doing, she talks about, is they're launching a real physical old-fashioned newspaper called The Rebel Times next year, and I'm really excited to get my hands on it. It's a monthly newspaper delivered to your physical home door, and it's going to be full of kind of longer form pieces, opinion pieces, essays, stories. They're bringing back the funny pages. Like it's a really cool project that if you wanted to check out, just go to folkrebellion.com or look them up on Instagram. And Jess has been posting some really interesting updates about it.
Awesome. Before we get into the chat, how about a plug for a symbol year?
Okay.
Off you go.
Thank you. So as we mentioned last week with Courtney Carver's episode, Simple Year is back for 2018, and it is a 12-month guided program, I guess, into simplicity. And in it, every month he is led by a different simplicity advocate or expert. So I am leading the January module, actually, where I talk through decluttering. And every module includes articles, live calls, and homework. So it's actually quite heavily guided throughout the year. But then there's also modules on finances and work and food and relationships and gift giving and gratitude and mindfulness. And it's a fantastic program. This might be the fourth year. I think 2018 is my fourth year that I've been working with Courtney and co. And yeah, it's open for early bird registration now. That closes, I believe, on the 14th of November. So you've still got a few days if you're listening to
another week or so,
the day that it comes out. But it does reopen again at the beginning of January. It'll be open again for another week or two there if you can't make it happen this time around. It's you haven't missed out on your opportunity. It's okay. But check it out. You can just go to slowyourhome.com and at the top left of the, you know, the menu at the top of the website.
Oh, yeah, one of those menu tabs.
One of those menu things is a link to Simple Year 2018. Check it out there. And yeah, in the meantime, enjoy the episode. Hello, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So well. Even better for speaking with you. It's so great to connect.
No, I'm very, very excited to talk to you today.
So let's just get straight into it. You are the founder of Folk Rebellion, which is one of my favorite, I guess, movements, lifestyle, brands, whatever you want to call it. And you've been the face of that for 4 years. Can you tell me why you started Folk Rebellion?
Sure. So I actually started it out of my own personal need and experience. If you had asked me even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, if I would be doing this, the answer would have been no. I had fallen face first into a career in technology and digital unexpectedly. I was a writer, and when the internet, you know, became a tool for people to communicate, for me, it was really easy. It was just like another form of word of mouth marketing. And so having a marketing background and a writing background, like I said, it just became a very immersed in the digital space. Fast forward to many years later, which is about 4 years ago, I started to see a bunch of different doctors for some issues that I was having with my brain. I was losing focus and memory, and my attention span was, you know, all but gone. And I had this general feeling of like malaise and disassociation. And so I started to visit these different doctors, and everyone had a different answer that ranged anywhere from nutrition to gluten intolerance to baby brain, because I'd had a child at this point in time. He was 2.5. You know, whatever they recommended, I did, and nothing made it better. And it's really scary when you feel your brain leaving you, or the sharpness, or your memory. And so I even visited some energy doctors. I went some non-traditional routes as well, and nothing helped. And my sister lives in Hawaii, and my husband and son and I went on a vacation to see her. And when we landed, Glenn, my husband, he asked that I turn over all of my technology, because he knew that I had given people orders while I was gone to run things for me for all of my clients. And, you know, of course, me, I stepped off the plane, and the first thing I did was text one of my clients saying, I landed, I'm available, you know. So self-important and stupid now looking back. But so I, standing in the airport, we're getting the lays, and I went through this range of emotions from rage and hate at my husband to mom guilt, and then just regret. And I started crying and stepped aside and put on Out of Offices, and then handed everything over to him. I handed over my cell phone, my laptop, which is basically like my child, my iPad, my e-reader. And yeah, I think that was it. And I just handed it all to him. And you have to understand this to know how I started Folk Rebellion, which was 8 days later. We woke up on the island of Kona, and it was like someone had turned on a light switch in my brain. And I woke up in the morning, and it was a switch. There was just an absolute on and off switch. And I could tell you what the sheets felt like under my skin. I could tell you what the ocean smelt like. I wanted to start writing immediately. I hadn't been writing in so long. I was fresh. I was aware. My memory was there. And I said to Glenn, I said, oh my God, I feel like my old self. And he said, I didn't know that there was an old self and a new self. And with that statement was just this giant light bulb, because Glenn had only ever known me since I'd had this super, and I'm doing air quotes right now, important job as a digital brand strategist in New York City. He had never known the girl that was, you know, from the Adirondacks and slow and had all these hobbies outside and preferred to lay in the grass. He'd never met that person. And so when I came back to New York, I reached out to a bunch of people in my network. I was very lucky to have some amazing scientists, doctors, futurists that I had done work with in the past, and reached out to all of them and said, I think I scrambled my brain. And they said essentially that that's not the term that they call it or how they say it. But because I was an early adopter and an overuser, I was at the extreme end. And yes, they cannot study the technology fast enough to keep up with the usage and the exponential growth of what's happening. You know, just 10 years, we didn't even have an iPhone. And but they said that the good news was that now that I was aware of it, I could make changes in my life to, you know, make sure that this didn't happen again. So I went into work on Monday, met with a bunch of different clients, and had my laptop closed and no cell phone, and had a pen and paper, because I realized that I had retained information a lot better when I was younger, when I was keeping notes. And essentially was told in the first meeting that if I was a digital strategist, why was all of my technology put away? And that, you know, if I wanted to keep my job, I better get it out. And so it was that at that moment that I realized I had had this epiphany, but most other people had. And I quit right there. I don't recommend that for everyone. And a week later, I started Folk Rebellion.
Man, that is such an amazing story. I think that that feeling of fogginess that you described is something that pretty much everyone can attest to. And I love that you were able to, within the first week, you know, 8 days, I think you said, of switching off, your senses woke up, you know, and you were able to describe what the sheets felt like and what the ocean sounded like. And for me, like, that's the antithesis of this kind of tech zombie era that we live in. It's the tiny details that we spend time in the noticing of that is kind of the stuff of life. And I think once you've seen that, once you've felt that, once you've experienced even just for a minute that wholeness of paying attention, it's almost impossible to go back. I think that's incredible. So your change was actually really incredibly sudden. Did you, after you'd quit your job, did you make wholesale changes to the way that you were living immediately?
Oh, for sure. I probably downplay it when I speak about it, but it was terrifying what was happening to my brain. It really was. And, you know, I thankfully live in this amazing city where there's these wonderful doctors. And when you're going to a neurologist and they can't figure out what's wrong with you, but you know something's wrong with you, it's terrifying. And so I made immediate changes. I started to introduce analog is what I call it, but basically 3D wherever I could. Of course, you know, the world's undeniably digital. I'm not anti-technology. It's just that it had consumed every facet of my life. And so, you know, I also had a child. So it was kind of like this perfect storm of, I had this career that was teaching me this skill set where I could build an audience and create content and share an idea, but it was burning me out at the same time I was learning that skill set. And then I was a new mother. And I'm also of the generation where I remember what a childhood and life was like prior to technology. And so, yeah, it was like the perfect storm. And I went a little, I guess if you ask my husband, he'd say I went a little crazy. I got rid of as much technology as I possibly could. I stopped using my iPhone for about 2 months just to see what it felt like and write about it. And then it really went down this black hole of understanding and education, really trying to read about these effects from technology. And there, you know, 4 years ago, there aren't half as many books or a quarter of as many books as there are out today, you know, concerning these topics. Sherry Turkle had just written a book called Alone Together. And, you know, that was one of the main ones. And another one that I read was The Digital Divide. But, you know, if I look over at my nightstand in my bedroom, you can now see that there's 20 books talking about this in just 4 years. So I did make immediate changes. Yes. A lot of them I still have today.
And what was the response from your family, your husband, your child? I mean, was there any resistance, or was it, I mean, could your husband see the benefits for you immediately and was like, okay, I'm on board with this?
Yeah. he could see the benefits. He understood where I was coming from. At this time, you know, people were starting to wake up to the idea that they were irritated, that there was always a blue screen in somebody's face, or they couldn't get through a conversation at a restaurant without being interrupted. Snapchat, I don't even think it was created yet, or it had just been created. So, you know, there was a lot of things still being introduced, but people were already starting to feel this way. I just didn't realize how many were feeling like I was. And so in my home, you know, logically, yes, my husband was like, you're right. You know, there's something to this. And I think you've got a great idea here. And it's important, specifically because we were parents and we were seeing what other parents were doing with their children. But at the same time, he is what I would call a heavy user. He has a job in real estate where, you know, it's basically 24/7. If you miss a form of communication from someone, that goes to somebody else. And so that piece of business. And so you hear a lot of these rationalizations from people in different industries, and there are ways around them. But so yes, they were supportive. My family was supportive, but it wasn't until a year or two later when they started to really notice the difference in how I operated around them versus other friends and family, and very specifically how my child was compared to other children that was in their lives. And so slowly people started coming over to the dark side, my side, I guess.
And I think that's the case. I mean, I'm not sure if people ask you, but I'm asked a lot, how do I get people on board with these like slow living changes that I'm trying to make? And I don't think that there is any fast way to do that. I really don't. You know, I don't think that you can cajole or nag or kind of guilt or bully people into joining you. It's a matter of living with the benefits yourself and exemplifying them yourself. And over time, people do see that you react and respond differently and interact differently and sit in life differently and experience things differently. And that I've seen anyway is far more motivating, I think, for people than preaching at them. You know, I haven't met anyone who has been guilted or nagged into making a lifestyle change who doesn't have some kind of resentment, or they sort of half-ass their change anyway. It's you can lead a horse to water, I guess. But I think that exemplifying the benefits of it is probably one of the best ways you can encourage people to try and make these changes.
Oh yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. It's as simple as, like, no one wants to be told, what do you do if someone tells you to put your phone away? I mean, you bristle. Mm-hmm. Everybody. No one really likes to be told what to do. And then it's also calling out your bad manners in a bit. So something that I've taught my son to say is, you know, I'll wait till you're done. Nope. Like, he'll just say it. So instead of being like, put your phone away, it's more just like a manners thing that he's showing. And people really kind of wake up to that. The one thing that I have found that has helped some people, well, one is just the conversation that there can be another way, that just because we are, you know, accessible 24/7, the news and entertainment and media is 24/7, doesn't mean that we should be, mm-hmm. or we have to be, or that it's good for us. So it's just that idea that, you know, just as, because I hate the saying, it is what it is, that, you know, to me that feels like, you know, nothing can be changed. And I like to inspire people to think that there could be another way in which we operate within this, you know, fast-paced technological world. And the other way is when people do actually have an experience like I had, which I find they can only get to that experience if you totally strip them of their devices. And so you read a lot or hear a lot about digital detoxes or digital diets, and they're not the answer, I don't feel, because you can't most people cannot live in an on or an off state. But what I like about them is that it brings the awareness to people of how they feel when they're reunited with these technologies. And then they do want what you have or what I have, which is that slower feeling of, like you said, sitting in life a little bit differently. And so it's been kind of a cool way to see how people wake up is really what it is.
And it is. It's an awakening. It's an awareness. It's like a changed worldview or you know, the way that we experience things. I think it's just, it's really difficult to go back completely once you've had that experience. And I'm the same as you. I don't necessarily think that, you know, an on-off kind of situation is the way forward permanently. But I know for myself, when I've gone traveling and have decided to be offline for a week or up to a month, those are the times where big things happen and big changes and big shifts. And when you come back on, your habits have, I guess your awareness of your habits and your awareness of the outcome of those habits is heightened. And then you can use that as a motivator or a drive to make permanent changes and allow you to actually do your job or live your life, but do it in a way that works.
My team gets mad at me sometimes, but they understand if I have, you know, I kind of think of this like as like a faucet, right? Our habits and specifically technology. And so if I have a piece of news coming out, right, that we've been covered in some press, and I have to be on everything a little bit more because you want to get the most out of it, and or I'm developing something, there's a lot of communication, the drip turns into a river. And so after a while, I'm like, okay, you know, we've launched this, we're good, I need a moment. And I'll take, you know, 3 to 5 days, and I'll say, I just need to be off of everything. It's like a reset for me. And so my team knows, they're like, oh, there she goes again. But I have to, so that when I come back, I can move back to that drip. I can see how I'm using these things and use them. Just, it's a better awareness. So yeah.
So just on that, I mean, you run a business that utilizes the internet and social media because you write about on your website, it's important to meet people where they are, and people are online, you know. And I think that what you do so beautifully is use your platform as like a reminder. You're kind of just in there reminding people, hey, there's more than what you see on this little screen. Go and experience some of it. Or here's some food for thought that might actually drive you to switch off and go and look in someone's face for a minute. But, you know, what does your day look like in terms of tech use? How do you create and maintain and honor those boundaries around it?
Oh, yeah. So it was really hard when I went off on my own because I'd been a part of, you know, the machine, the 9-to-5 machine, corporate America for so long. And so your booty was in a chair at a certain time and you were considered working if it was in the chair. And then the internet happened and email. And I can remember when we had faxes before we had email. And so like the fax machine stayed at the office and you didn't take that home with you. And if people wanted to get a hold of you after work, they had to call your house phone. Mm-hmm. And no one really wanted to call your house phone and interrupt your family dinner. So work waited until you went back the next day. And so it really bled for me into kind of all hours with digital, like it did with everybody. And so when I went off on my own, I found myself still just sitting in a chair by myself from 9 to 5 and then reading emails until God knows what time. And I was like, what are you doing? Like you've created this, you need to embody this. And so I, within the first 3 months, I totally changed how I work. And so now what I do is I don't look at any media or specifically email until after my son goes to school. So I have a morning where we listen to music, we do homework, we make breakfast, we get ready, we get out the door, I walk him to school and come back and I grab a cup of coffee. And when I get back to the house, you know, and you know, there's other rituals that I have in there for myself. Like I need to meditate for a few minutes every morning before it really gets going. But the first 2 hours of my, you know, air quotes working day, when everybody thinks they should start work, is usually around 9. I do my most important task first. So that could be something different every day. Right now, it's this new publication that I'm working on. And so a lot of my most important tasks happen away from the screen. That's where I just feel I am less distracted. I feel more creative. I'm really present in that moment. And that's when the quality work comes out, when you're really focused on something for 2 hours. And for me, I'm really fresh around 9:30, 10. That's like my best working hours. And so I don't even open my emails until after I've accomplished that, because I see emails as sort of this waterfall of, data, information, and other people's to-do lists. Mm-hmm. So it's reactionary versus proactive. So I make sure that I'm doing the proactive thing that's going to benefit my company the most before I see what I have to react to for the rest of the day, because it also sets the tone for your day. And then the other thing that I do is I batch my emails. So once I do check them, I work on the emails and I correspond with people for about an hour, and then I don't come back to them until later that day. I actually have an app on my Chrome extension. So I use Gmail for my email, and it's called Boomerang, the Boomerang app, and you download it into your, and as an extension, and it allows you to pause your inbox. Mm. So I not only don't check it, but I stop the emails from coming into my inbox until I unpause it. And the people who have emailed me are notified that I'm working on something, and I'm not staring at my computer screen right now, but I will get back to you. You know, it says it's a little bit more eloquent than that, but it's a good way for me to stay focused. And batching my emails has allowed for me to make the most of my time and my productivity. I take my lunches outside and away from my desk. I go for a walk. I lay on the grass. I really like to connect to, I guess you'd say I'm kind of like a woodland fairy. It's funny, I live in Brooklyn, but if I can get near some nature for a little bit, then it's very grounding for me. And then I do a lot of writing. I write it by hand, or I speak it and record it and then have somebody transcribe it for me. And then I pick up my son. So, and then I don't look at email for the rest of the night or on the weekend. So I'm really super strict about it. And you know what? My business has grown. That, you know, there are times where I'm sure some people want to kill me, but we're setting an example. And I really believe that we can change, you know, how we are operating in this working world with this technology. And I want to be a light for people and an example for people, and show companies and other folks that, you know, with some boundaries, the work actually gets better and more enjoyable.
And that's the thing that I wish more people would understand. You know, I'm so often asked about this issue of being available all the time. And, you know, my people are saying, my company, my boss, the expectation is that I'm going to be responsive all the time. And that just, that really is so difficult for me to comprehend, because when we take time to work deeply on things, our work is better, we're more satisfied. But when we also take time to be completely disengaged from technology, from work, that's when, for me, and I know a lot of people, I do a lot of thinking, a lot of processing of information. And even if it's not directly related to work, I come back fresher. And I just wish that it wasn't this hamster wheel, I guess, that people feel like they're stuck in. And I love that what you're doing is exemplifying it. Like, you are saying, this is how it works, and it does work, and this is why. It's fantastic. So sorry, go on.
No, just about that. I'm actually working on like a how-to guide, how to talk to your boss. Awesome. About this, that people will be able to download from our website and tailor. But essentially, there's all of this data out there that shows how often mistakes happen with overwork, how often burnout happens, productivity goes down by like 60% after hour number 8. So if you're able to frame this in the way that a boss, a CEO, a manager can comprehend that it's affecting their bottom line, that it's affecting their profit, that it's affecting their their team culture. If you can frame it that way, and this is something that I do with like my coaching, then they might be open to hearing about it. And so, and it's, I often encourage people to try it as like a test, like, Hey, boss, who always wants me to answer emails 24/7. I'm feeling this way. The data supports this. How about for 7 days, for 1 week, we try it another way. And then we come back and see how we all feel. And typically in the corporate environment, when I'm doing these, you know, wellness trainings, they adopt these hacks, recommendations that increase productivity and give everybody else permission to take a breath once in a while.
Yeah. And I think putting it in language that an employer would appreciate, which is essentially the bottom line, is important, I guess. While it should be, the bottom line should be people, it's not always necessarily the case. So you mentioned that you're working on a new publication, and I really want to talk about this because it's exciting. You know, you're putting together a paper, like a physical newspaper. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's a life dream. When I started this, I knew that I wanted to have a physical publication, an analog version for people to, you know, learn about, you know, the effects of technology, of, you know, living slower, more mindfully, and inspiration for other ideas instead of always being plugged in. But it was a scary thing to want to do right in the beginning. You know, as you said, the world is like undeniably digital. I have to meet people where they are. But now, 4 years later, I feel that we're finally in a place that, one, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and show people that you can get a lot more substance and connection to a subject in the physical space than online. I'm not totally walking away from our online world at all. It's still going to be there to inspire people, to share our message, get introduced to new partners. But I felt like we were just scratching the surface of what we could do for our community. And I really truly believe in the rituals around waiting for something and long form content that you have to totally focus on, and sitting in having a special chair that you can just really pour over something for days and days. And so I want to provide that for our community. And I started to research this, and, you know, you hear about these publications closing, you know, their print editions, but it's because that they're a different, you know, old dated sort of business model. And I know that we're going to do it in a unique way, and that we're not creating churn and burn content just to create something. There is such a desire from our community to share these ideas and stories. And we're going to make sure that our advertisers are not advertisers, but they're conscious sponsors, where they don't get to market a campaign at somebody telling them to be better, faster, you know, healthier, skinnier. We're not going to allow anything like that. It's just going to be a letter to our readers with their logo on it. And it's coming out in January 2018. It's going to be a monthly publication, and it's going to tie back to the digital community. So you'll get this publication, and it's going to have everything in it, from worksheets and courses, as well as, you know, articles and researched papers. And we're even resurrecting the old funny pages, but we're going to do it where we're pulling from illustrators and cartoonists and artists who you would miss if you stopped following them on Instagram because you got a dumb phone or something. So that's one of the things I hear about, is that, you know, people do find a lot of things that they love on Instagram or on Facebook or wherever, that if they are going to scale back their usage, they do feel like they have that FOMO, that fear of missing out. So this was a big area, was they love these cartoons. And so we're going to create a funny pages around online artists. And so, yeah, so then basically people are going to be able to access our community and discuss what it was that they read online. And so it's a tool to find like-minded people, to share their ideas, what inspired them, what they disagreed with, and then keep each other accountable for whatever our challenges of the month. We're going to be asking people to do we'll have like a movie of the month, a podcast of the month, and a book of the month. And so, you know, the movie was important to me because I think entertainment and media is great in a certain way. And so viewing a television together, a movie, used to be very communal. And now you have someone on a couch watching an iPad, another person live tweeting, and then something on the television. And so you have all these second, third, and fourth screens. And so I really want to encourage people to make it something that brings people together. And then on our online platform, they'll be able to go and discuss, you know, what the effects were from all of this. So again, using the digital forums and media as a way to connect people, but not as a replacement for everything.
Yeah. And I think that's the key. You know, this the internet offers so many tools and opportunities for connection. And I've seen that in my work and the community that we've created. And I think it's wonderful. But it's not, like you said, it's not a replacement. What you're doing is kind of giving people access in a really analog, physical way to this information and giving them time to do the head work, you know, the thinking work. It takes time for this stuff to really marinate in our brains and then for us to act upon it. But then using the community online as a catalyst for that, I think it's wonderful.
Thank you very much. If you can't tell, I'm really excited.
So am I.
Thank you.
So I've got, I guess, one question that I want to ask you before we wrap up is that you live in Brooklyn, and yes. I haven't been to Brooklyn yet, but I really want to head there next year on our road trip. But people often talk to me about slow living as synonymous with country living and, you know, growing all of the veggies and wandering kind of the country lanes and going bushwalking every day and all that kind of stuff. And I think it absolutely can be that. But I'm actually of the opinion that a lot of the elements of living a slower, simpler life are more available to people who live in a bigger center like you. How do you feel that city living, I guess, works with slow living? Are there benefits to it? Are there sort of things that are harder to manage in terms of living that slower paced life?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. So Brooklyn is amazing. We have access to basically anything that we need here, and they've really worked on greenifying all of our, I guess you would call them coasts, but, you know, basically where the land meets the water. And so there's plenty of places for us to get out into nature and walk. But the big difference for me is that it feels like slow living here is a very purposeful choice and a rebellious one, I should say. Brooklyn seems to be on the forefront of that, of doing all things slow food, slow blogging. We have a ton of knitting clubs and book clubs, and people are really looking to connect in real life again and really slow down. But saying that, we are at the epicenter of one of the fastest places, you know, the city that never sleeps. And so we have that consistent energy and buzz about it, which it's equal parts amazing and awful, right? Mm. So because I'm always aware of it, and, you know, where I live, you can hear the cars headed, you know, over the Brooklyn Bridge. And so it's a very purposeful choice, where when I go to the country, which is where I'm from originally, up to my mom's house, it seems maybe like she doesn't even realize that she's slow living or that it's an easier way, where here I'm very determined to do it. So I don't know if that really answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I find it really interesting that I think there are so many, well, actually I'm speaking about where I live more, you know, more specifically, but there are more, I guess, utilities that would allow for certain elements of slow living in city centers than there are in some of the more rural areas, you know, even just things like bulk food stores and more communal opportunities for, I don't know,
yes.
whatever it is, but to get out and to be amongst people, I think is often easier to do when you live in a more urban center. So I always kind of encourage people who think that slow living means a move to the country to actually just get out and engage with your community and find out what's available to you and use that as your basis for slow living. It doesn't have to look a particular way. It's about, like you said, being purposeful and intentional in living a particular way.
Absolutely. I did try to leave New York a couple years ago, and I went up to, it wasn't necessarily the country. I would say it was more like the suburbs. And I came back because I missed the connection to community. Mm. It was isolating living in a cul-de-sac versus living on a block of, you know, buildings and brownstones where everybody goes to the same coffee shop and you walk everywhere. And now I understand what you're saying. And there is, I prefer it. So I have my escapes to the country, but being here and allowing me to connect with like local authors and farm to table experiences done by my friends who are starting new companies or going kayaking on the waterfront with the new, Brooklyn Boulders Club. There's a lot of opportunity here. Yes.
Yeah. No, I think it's brilliant. And I think, like you said, you're just getting out there and engaging with that kind of stuff and talking about it and sharing it means that more and more people are going to hear about it. And that essentially that's how community kind of grows by encouraging people to come along with you or join in. Yeah. I think it's tops. Jess, I could talk to you for another hour, but I'm really mindful of your time. Good luck with the paper, the publication, and I hope to be able to connect with you when I'm in New York next year. But people who want to find out more about the paper should just go to folkrebellion.com.
Yes, folkrebellion.com. And I say sign up for our newsletter because we're sending out an announcement next month and letting people know how that they can get involved. So that's the best way to stay in touch.
Awesome. No, we'll do that. And there'll be links to everything in the show notes as well. But thank you so much for your time.
Brooke, thank you. This was really lovely. And I too could talk to you all day. So I so look forward to having you in Brooklyn and I'll be your tour guide.
That sounds amazing. Thanks, Jess.
Thank you. Have a great one.
You too.
Who is that?
Hi, Puck Pass.